In my first year of priesthood, we had a number of priests leave. It kind of threw us all for a loop. We all kind of had to scramble to keep track of certain things. And one of the things that became kind of difficult was scheduling events where you needed priests, more particularly reconciliation services, where you needed people to hear confession. I don't know if you've ever been to Holy Cross Batavia, but they're really good at having a big turnout for their reconciliation services. They can often have 12 priests and go for a couple hours, or even 3 or 4 hours. It can take a little while. And when I got a phone call from Holy Cross Batavia while I was living in Rockford and asked if I would come and hear confessions, I knew they were pretty desperate if they were going to call a guy that lived an hour and a half away. And they asked if I could get another priest, so I got one of the other priests to go with me from the Holy Family. And the challenge was that I knew that we had to get through all the Masses at Holy Family first, and then we could head on down there, and it could inevitably cause a bit of a crunch. And sure enough, by the time we got out the door and into the car and on our way down to Batavia, I looked at the clock and we had about 45 minutes to cover a distance that took about an hour and a half. So I did what most people do. I just sort of gun it and hope that I can see the cop before he sees me. I was wrong. So with Father O'Kahey in my passenger seat with his alb in his lap and red and blue lights flashing in my rearview mirror, I pulled off to the side, and the state trooper came over to me and asked, "Would you like to guess how fast you were going?" And I said, "Clearly not fast enough to get to where I need to be. I'm trying to save souls. I'm on my way to a church to hear confessions. What's your excuse?" He had never heard that one before, so that was a bit of a surprise for him, too. He saw two priests sitting in the car with our albs and our stoles, and our story suddenly looked very plausible. And I told him where I was going, and our story looked even more plausible, and so he did what every good trooper does. He asked for my license and registration and went to go see if I had any outstanding warrants. Sure enough, I was exactly who I said I was, and I came back as clean as he expected, and he looked me in the eye and said, "I'll let you go, just slow down." So I said, "Sure, we'll try it your way." We got there a little later than I wanted to, but don't worry, we still heard confessions for 95 minutes, so I mean, it wasn't a great loss, I suppose. But I think it's a powerful reminder to us of how we look at law, especially here in the United States. We are a powerfully litigious country. We're very proud of our laws. We take great pride in our laws. We have lots of them. If we don't like the way the law is enforced, that's why we have the courts. We have the Supreme Court. We can turn over our laws. We can reinforce and enact new ones. And we're always coming out with additional laws to clarify, to sharpen, and make more specific. Well, January 1st, I think Illinois came out with some 600 new laws just this year alone. I mean, it's a constant, ongoing, developing process. But how do we see it? And how do we see our relationship to it? I think this is such an important thing for us to see, because we are a nation that takes such a great pride in our law, and yet, genuinely speaking, let's be honest for a brief moment, sometimes we look at the law and we think, "This law doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I won't follow it as long as nobody catches me." We get kind of indifferent to certain laws, or even aggressively against other ones. You know, I know there's a law in this state that clearly states that we're not supposed to talk on our cell phones with them by our ear as we drive, and yet, according to the troopers here in Dixon, it is a daily occurrence that they pull someone over for doing exactly that. So it's not such a dedicated following of the law. I'm pretty sure we all break the speed limit at some point or another, or at least according to the records that they show, we certainly seem to have a propensity to sometimes push our luck with that. And is it really following the law? And I bring this up not because I'm curious or critical of how you observe traffic laws or how you observe even some of these civil laws that you may not think are as relevant or not. My challenge for us is that there's a temptation to look at all law the same. If we see traffic laws this way, if we see civil law this way, there's a temptation to look at God's law the same way. There's this temptation that sort of carries it over, and before you know it, we sort of treat it all on the same level. And this actually is where it gets kind of tricky for us. This actually is where it gets a little more frightening. Simply because, think about the law, where it comes from, what it is, and where we're going with it. Because it says in Sirach, it says, "Keep these commandments and they will save you. Trust in God and you shall live." I don't think the tax law will ever bring you salvation, no matter how well you follow it. And I certainly have my doubts that following the traffic laws perfectly to a T are going to achieve heaven for you. But It is the way of God's law. It is the responsibility of us to live into the law of God in such a way that we are genuinely striving, longing, and hoping for salvation. That it is contained within the law of God that we long to live the law so that we might be close to God. And I think it really comes home to us in this gospel. You know, it really does come home to us in this gospel because Jesus says very directly, "You shall not commit adultery." You've heard it said, "You shall commit adultery." I'm telling you, anyone who looks at a woman with lust in their heart, with his heart. "You shall not kill." I'm telling you, it's anyone who's angry at his brother. It isn't just how we treat the civil law. It isn't coming right after that edge and going no further. It isn't, for lack of a better analogy, it isn't like going up to your sibling, leaning in really close, and then reminding them that you're not actually touching them, which is what they told you not to do, but rather you're just a quarter inch away, so technically you're not touching them. It's more than that with God's law. With God's law, it's actually an invitation to love. I know it sounds strange to talk about law this way, and I don't mean it for civil law or traffic laws or any of those. All of those for different reasons. But genuinely, when we look at God's law, it's an invitation to love. It really starts with the very first one and goes all the way to the ones we currently have. When the first man and the first woman were visited with God, he said, "Don't eat the fruit of that tree." Was it because that tree was going to kill him? That's not why. Was it because that tree was poisoned? That wasn't why. The question was, would you love me enough to do this for me? It doesn't have to make sense, but it's no great burden either. Would you love me enough to do this for me? And that's actually where the challenge falls for us. When we're given these commandments, don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't bear false witness, don't steal, don't covet. These laws are given to us as a question, would you show your love for me in doing these things? I can point to the benefits of doing these laws, and there's so many wonderful things about, you know, not killing our neighbor, stealing, lying, cheating, and depriving them of liberty. I mean, there's so many things we can describe in that benefit. But when it comes to God's law, it really requests of us this embrace, this genuine, heartfelt embrace that says, would you love me enough to do these things? Now, of course, we're going to come up short sometimes. We're going to screw up. We're not perfect. Even the first parents, they couldn't get it right either. And all they had to do was ignore one tree, but they still couldn't figure it out. I mean, we're still going to struggle. We're still going to fall. We're still going to screw up. It happens. And it doesn't mean that God loves us any less when we do it. It doesn't mean that somehow we're completely cast out and there's no more coming back. Quite the opposite. We have a sacrament of confession. We have this wonderful opportunity to return to God and say, you know what? I screwed up. But I want to do better. And I think that's really a reminder of what this law is. I think that's really a reminder of who we are in this love. That we are truly called to live into something out of a great desire for love of God, and not out of some dreadful fear of punishment. We can talk about the punishment all we want, but really that shouldn't be the drive. It really should come from something deeper. I came to it when I was growing up. I genuinely hope all of you did too. When I was first growing up with my parents, you didn't do stuff because you feared the punishment. And most of the stuff was self-obvious. Don't touch the stove, it's hot. Don't leave the fridge door open all day, it'll kill you. You know, just real basic things you're supposed to follow anyway. But at a certain point, I really didn't fear the punishment anymore. What are they going to do, ground me, take away privileges? I mean, yeah, those things are frustrating, but really in the grand scheme of things, it's not the worst of it. The worst of it for me was disappointing my parents. To really let them down because they expected more from me. And that really hurt more than any punishment they could come up with. And I genuinely want to encourage you to see that in our own lives. That this following of God's law, it's an invitation to love. Not a penal system waiting to punish us. It's always funny to me, I still get asked all the time, why would you do something as stupid or as crazy as embrace celibacy? You know, doesn't that seem ridiculous? Don't you like people? Don't you want a long-lasting relationship? And the answer for me is so far beyond what everyone else is trying to think. Because everyone's focused on the reasons of punishment and cost analysis and benefit loss. And I mean, that all has a forum we can discuss. But for me, the question was never there. For me, the question was always on the other end of things. God asked me to do this. It doesn't always have to be the easiest thing for me to do. It doesn't even always have to be something I look forward to. But you know, God asked me to do it. And I wanted to respond in love and say, you know what? I'll make this sacrifice for God. Because it is exactly that. It's a sacrifice. And I want to encourage you to see God's law that way. Because the Sirach does promise. You choose to keep the commandments, they'll save you. Trust in God, you will live. That's our challenge. And that's what we live into.